You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know, but after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, talking to Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, did someone who was about to leave the world have a vision into the future about a yet-to-be-born child? That's today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your Real Ghost Story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We'd absolutely love to hear them. You can also write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you really like the show, and you've been binging away through all of October, and you're still here, thank you, and please stick around, and you want to support the program and get even more episodes, well, then become an extra podcast person, an EPP as we call it. Maybe make it an early Christmas gift to yourself or something. Just sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. It's only $5 a month. And with that, you'll get access to the 300-some bonus episodes that are exclusively for EPPs, packed with our best ghost stories ever. You get advanced episodes of the show ad-free. You get our ebook, you get our audiobook. And if you want to go even one further and get a month of that free, sign up for an annual membership. Options are available both places, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Two different platforms. Got to pick the one you like the best. And then that's the platform you're with. And then you get access, you know, wherever you want, whenever you want, to all of our ghost stories. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well, but not as well as if it were a weekend where we're planning to get away to the Holodome.
The Holodome.
Is there really anything more exciting in life than going to a Holodome?
If it's 1992, no.
It's 1992 and you're like eight.
Mm-hmm.
The words Holodome mean holy shit.
Big pool.
That's going to be a good time.
Sliding door access to the big pool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that did you get that? Did you ever get the sliding door access?
Oh, totally.
Oh, God. You know, I'm jealous because we only would get the, you know, be like the rooms in the hallways because my mom would be like,
away from the noise.
Just so noisy. And the kids are playing so loud. I couldn't sleep. Hi, Mom. I know you're listening, walking through a graveyard right now, but that's, you know, she didn't sound like that, but that was what she expressed.
Sure.
And I get it. I feel the same way probably for the most part, but we stayed at damn near, we did stay at a Holodome recently. About a year, it wasn't a Holodome anymore. I think it was like a Radisson or something, but the remnants of the Holodome still existed. And there was a wedding going on outside our room until like God knows all hours of the morning.
Oh, I forgot about that. That was just you and me.
Yeah.
And your parents had the kids.
In my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Holiday Inn. That was once a Holodome. So we actually, I was just reading an article about, and I bring this up because I'm bringing up old buildings and structures that don't really, you know, they're kind of ragged and falling apart in many cases. I just saw an interesting one earlier today about the Holodome. Mm-hmm. And the excitement that it would bring people. And now and somebody talked about one that they owned and they went to go see what it looked like today. And it was just a field.
Aww.
It had been torn down. And the thing is, in their infancy, they were great. But then upkeep came. Mm-hmm. And humidity and rusting metal and mold. Drywall and mold and the cost to keep them up were just insane. And that's why so many of them were just either torn down or completely changed and all that. But back in the day, if you found a Holodome where that pool was like Olympic size inside the building and mm-hmm. there's little putt-putt areas and a tiki bar, and at night you could see the stars. It was such a neat, magical place. But they don't exist anymore because it turns out they couldn't be kept up very well. But there are some creepy ones that still exist in pretty shoddy motels. Those are kind of fun to see.
Yeah, we've stayed at those. But didn't the one we stayed in one in Texas, but it was actually, they had opened it up.
The dome was removed.
Yeah.
A lot of them removed domes to make them feasible.
Yeah. And that was nice.
Yeah. I mean, if you do that, it's an outdoor pool. Mm-hmm. But up north, you have no choice. I mean,
sure.
But we tried to stay at one. I believe it was like online. It looked good. It had okay reviews. And then we got there. It was Once a Holiday and it was something else now. And then we got to the room and it smelled horrible and it was only one bed. And then we got a refund and got the hell out of there. But I remember sitting in the Holodome area.
Yeah.
Waiting for that all to process. And it was like, hey, you might get a disease or something by going into the pool. Mm-hmm. Just because. But again, it was just like the rotting remnants of these holodomes. I find them kind of creepy and neat and weird and intriguing. It's because it's old architecture. It's rotting away. I think it's the urban exploration, and it's still neat to see some of these things still trying to operate.
Well, and we remember when they were really cool.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing. When mm-hmm. you see, it's like a living antique.
It's kind of like how malls are now.
Yeah, it's antique tourism. Mm-hmm. You're touring. You're going to places that were once really quite amazing, and now they're kind of falling apart. And a lot of malls are like that. Some malls have been kept up, but there's quite a few where it's like, oh, this is sad.
Yeah,
you know, you almost like want to lay flowers in front of the Gap. And go, thank you for that shirt that I got in 1996. Still fits. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. We'll move on from our morning of holodomes move into some ghost stories. It says, thank you for the opportunity to share with you some interesting experiences that I believe relate to the end of life and the afterlife. My first experience occurred in 1994 when my 89-year-old grandmother was admitted to the hospital for congestive heart failure. She'd been living with her son and his family on a dairy farm in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, for about 4 years before her health had begun to decline. I was living in Sheboygan Falls, a small city 2 hours to the south, and would visit her, my aunt and uncle, about once a month. I know my mother appreciated these visits because she lived about 6 hours away in northern Wisconsin and was then unable to make frequent trips to visit her mother. Due to my grandmother's failing health, I made arrangements to pick up my mother at her home in Ashland, since she did not like to drive and my father wasn't able to make a trip to bring her to Green Bay. As we arrived at my uncle's home before continuing our trip to the hospital, he met us at the door with tears in his eyes. He told us that my grandmother had died earlier that morning with him at her side. This was before many people had cell phones and he was unable to communicate her passing before then. We spent the rest of the day talking about necessary arrangements. My uncle also shared with us that her passing was peaceful, but that an interesting event had occurred before she drew her last breath. My uncle was the only one in the hospital room with her when she told him that at the foot of her bed, she was seeing her sister Mary, who had died years earlier, me, and a little boy that stood by my side. He had been puzzled when she said that she had seen a little boy next to me because I had not yet had any children. He inquired about the little boy and asked her if the child was Cody or her only great-grandchild and my sister's two-year-old son. She responded with a no because this child had dark hair and eyes and stood very still and seemed shy. Cody was continually active toddler with blonde hair and blue eyes. Soon after that, she transitioned to her new life. This happened on August 10th. This event had always made me wonder who that child might be until I had my first son on August 11th, 2 years after my grandmother's vision and her passing. He has dark hair and eyes and is naturally shy. I cannot help but wonder if she had seen not only her sister who had passed, me who was still of this world, but Alex, her unborn great-grandchild. My next experience happened in 2005 when my father-in-law's health was failing and our family made a trip down to central Illinois to visit him and my mother-in-law. We arrived at my in-law's home earlier in the evening to find that my husband's father and mother had not returned from his dialysis appointment. However, they contacted us soon after our arrival to tell us they had decided to stop for dinner at a restaurant and they'd be coming home in about 2 hours. As we waited, we got our young sons ready for bed. I could not help but notice the clock that sat at the end of their hallway was ticking and chiming at the top of every hour and every half hour. Years ago, I had mentioned how much this clock sounds echoed in their hallway where the bedrooms were located, that it was a challenge to sleep. After hearing this, my father-in-law would always stop the clock for the duration of our visits. I thought this was quite a kind thing to do, and he'd always joked about doing it. As the evening continued, my husband received a call from his mother telling him that his father had passed out at the table at the restaurant and he was being rushed to the hospital. I stayed behind at the house with our sons as my husband left for the hospital. After putting our children to bed, I waited on pins and needles to find out how my father-in-law was doing. I sat in the living room. I began to realize how quiet it was. I no longer heard the clock ticking at the end of the hallway. Moments later, I received a call from my husband. His father had died at the hospital soon after he was admitted. My father-in-law had silenced the clock for me one last time. My last experience happened in May of 2018. I sat in the performance hall. I reflected on the successful senior year of school my youngest son Ben had just had. He had been a recipient of a very generous scholarship, had been one of the chosen few to perform at the local arts center, and was now performing for the community in his own recital. Both of my parents had died and were not able to be there physically to see their grandson share his passion with the community. As I sat there listening to his performance, I could not help but wonder if they were experiencing this event along with me. I thought to myself, if one of them would just flicker a stage light that was shining down as Ben performed, that would be a sign that they were here too. But then I thought that would be totally out of their character. They would not be the kind of people to pull any kind of trick on anyone at any time, especially on their grandson during his performance. So I thought again, if I were two cardinals today, if there were two cardinals today, that would be a sign for me that they were present. I did not share this little sign with anyone. On our way home, which was only a half a mile away, I got my answer. While driving down the road, my husband noticed a cardinal fly across our path. He mentioned it to me by saying, "Oh, look, a cardinal. Then, oh, there's another one." I was too overcome with emotion to share with him what that sighting meant to me. I replied simply with, "Oh." Thank you for considering my experiences with your podcast. Your podcast is a guilty pleasure of mine. The reflections you provide are always interesting, and I'm looking forward to hearing your response after you hear mine.
I like the stories that have like ghosts of the future, mm-hmm. kind of a tone to them. Like, you know, seeing the little boy before he's born, you know, it makes you wonder, does she always get to see the future on the other side? Or is it just, you know, kind of your last glimpse of what's going to happen before you go?
You get a quick little like fast forward.
Mm-hmm.
On the next chapter of your life that you're not going to live.
Yeah.
Does that, you know?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. Or, you know, are we ghosts before we are born? Does our energy exist in a ghostly vortex somewhere that, you know, we're conscious somewhat and then we get shoved into the body of a human? And then we're dealing with that set of equations to figure out until we're adults and matured and all of that. But, you know, is it, you know, like, you know, this kind of dumbs us down, if you will, when we're alive. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting here wondering and longing to figure, oh, what am I missing? What are the answers to these things? And then you die. It's like, oh, okay, shit makes sense again. And then maybe the cycle repeats. Maybe you choose, okay, I guess I'll go on to be another human again. And then you're dumbed back down again. And yeah. The filters are there. But sometimes children seem to see beyond those filters or inadvertently talk about some things. And then those things kind of fade away too. You know, is this always our first life? You know, or was there other stuff beforehand that we're unaware of? At least we are, but some people are not.
Right. It's hard to know. And, you know, the ones where you see your future children or your future grandchildren, you know, it always makes you wonder, is this just, is it like a cycle, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know.
I will say, I think I saw the closest thing to seeing what Harper's going to look like as an adult the other day. And I've always wondered this because you always wonder, like, what are they going to look like when they grow up? And it's Fear the Walking Dead is what really made me go, holy shit, like, she has a lot of similar, like, type facial features as Harper. And it's the redhead on there. What's her, do you know what her name is?
No, I don't. It's kind of a unique name.
Colby Minifee is her name. And she's kind of playing the badass on this season of Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And she's just got like same eyes, same nose, same facial structure, smile, all that. Mm-hmm. And I showed Livy too the other day. I said, who does this look like when she grows up? It's like, oh my God. She's like, yeah, like totally. Mm-hmm. And I even showed Harper. She's like, hell yeah, that's going to be how I'm going to. And the picture I showed was like this woman, like
in costume
on The Walking Dead on a horse, like, you know, slashing zombies.
Right.
But then I looked at like her IMDb and just regular old photos. I'm like, shit, like I've never seen someone that I thought like an adult redhead that I go, yeah, I think that's how Harper's going
to
look.
Well, it's like her eyes are similar to mine, but her nose is similar to yours. Yeah. And it's, you know, the hair's definitely dead on. And I don't know. It's just something about her. I thought that too.
Well, unless we had a secret child in 1992.
No.
Then because she's 28. She was born in 92.
Right.
So that would be a little difficult. But,
you know, and to some degree, I feel like a lot of redheads resemble each other. But I feel like she just looks like what Harper's going to look like.
Yeah. It's just kind of funny when you see that. It'll be interesting to see down the road how accurate that is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. Let's go to another caller. Hi, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi. I'd like to remain anonymous due to the nature of my story and the fact that I'm still in service, but I'm a member of the U.S. Army, and my story actually took place overseas on a deployment in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. I can't get much more specific than that, but basically my unit in the height of the fighting there was sent to a remote outpost to basically keep an eye on things moving towards the bigger areas of the U.S. military and basically kind of be the first lookouts and the first to confront enemies that may come in to attack. And we just started seeing some weird things, you know. And it started with hearing, you know, gunfire and stuff in the middle of the night, finding weird things buried in the sand, things like human bones and remains, along with pottery and stuff like that. And then it progressively would just get stranger and stranger. Over the whole course of time that we were on this position, we never actually entered into an attack or a combat situation, but we thought numerous times we were being attacked. But every time that we would hear the rounds or the whistling of mortar shells coming in, and we would brace ourselves for a fight, nobody could ever see where it was coming from. There was no enemies in the distance. There was no, you know, signs of the base being hit by bullets or mortars or anything, you know. But you could distinctly smell it in the air. You could definitely tell the sounds, you know, down to the type of weaponry that was being used. It became very scary. It became a very unnerving area to be in for the time that we had to be there. And these things began to happen so much that it probably became 3 or 4 times a week. We were coming out of our hooches in the middle of the night for a fight that turned out to not be there. And, you know, after you've been in the military and you've been in these situations for a certain amount of time, you can tell how close weaponry is. You can start to tell the type of weaponry by the sounds it makes. You know, and it didn't make sense to us with all the experience under us that we started to hear these things and recognize these signs without, you know, ever seeing one combatant, without ever entering into a fight, without ever seeing damage to, you know, the area that we were living in. And the only conclusion we started to come to was that either we were all collectively losing our minds, or there was something else that was going on here. And there's actually quite a few stories of hauntings that we had heard through the Middle East. I mean, being one of the oldest, you know, civilizations in the world, they definitely have their share of ghost stories. And whether the fact is that going over there, the combat is just scary enough in itself, or you're too focused on your job, you just normally don't experience a lot. I've talked to a lot of soldiers that have seen some bad things and bloody things, but supernatural stuff, it doesn't tend to be too common. Anyway, when we finally got out of there, it wasn't soon enough. You know, all of us left. We stayed very connected to each other. The soldiers that were there, we started to talk about it amongst each other in the months and years that would come from that. And one of our friends decided that he was going to research the place because he kept thinking about it so much. And he got together with some of us to share what he had found. And what he found was incredible. He found that in the war between that country and the Russians, you know, this was a space that had been occupied by the locals. And the Russians had basically gone in, executed the locals, buried them in the ground, built the outpost on top of them. And I mean, they executed everybody, you know, women, children, men, whatever. These people, from everything we read and saw, weren't even necessarily combatants. It was just a place that Russia wanted to occupy. So they killed everybody there, took it over, buried them, and built the base on top of them. So we started to look into it a little deeper. Come to find out, later on in the war, the locals took the area back. They actually came in. They massacred an entire Russian unit that had been left there, killed all of them, and retook the post, and then started to man the post as one of their own and used it as a prisoner camp to execute what they thought to be traitors. Well, all the years forward to the war that we were currently fighting, the Americans early on in the war had hit this post. I believe it was the U.S. Marines, and they killed all the local fighters that were holding the post at that point and retook the post again, retook the outpost. Certain things started to make sense. This was a place that was just, you know, covered in death, in battle. It had scars of numerous wars from years past, and the number of people that must have been executed there, you know, innocent and fighters, things started to make a lot of sense. Like the bones that we found, you know, the old dishes, the pottery, just, it started to make sense to us. And years later, I had had some friends who, you know, were from other countries that I'd met on different deployments. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was a soldier for England, who had actually slightly gone through that post himself. And he was telling me when they were there, they took it back from the Australians, that the countries of the UN nation would take turns manning this post because it was such a dangerous place to be and because it was so mentally stressful, because it seemed like everybody stationed there had stories, had experiences. He said when they took it from the Australians, they had many of the same experiences, and one of the things that stuck with him is how one of the Australian soldiers had told him right before they left, if you take anything from the ground, put it back. Put it back where it was and show respect for it. Luckily, all of us had done that, which is why I feel like we all ended up making it back okay and why none of us were ever hurt. I think what we were hearing and the attacks we thought were coming were maybe battles of spirits that were replaying in the area. We did hear a story, though, of an Australian soldier with that particular unit that was not respectful towards something that he found in the ground. And during a night on watch at the post, a scorpion actually had gotten onto him and he fell asleep and the scorpion stung him and it killed him. And it was just so many different strange coincidences, so many different bizarre experiences that in the process of finding and talking to more people that had gone through this place and shared their story, puzzle pieces started to come together and we started to see what was probably happening there. I think that this area, although every now and then ended up a battlefield for the current conflicts, was a war zone of ghosts. Different armies that had fought each other and died there. Civilians that were caught in the middle and died there, you know. And I've seen a lot of scary places as a soldier. And I would go back to any one of them to do my job, except for that place. I'm very strong in my faith. I didn't have a massive belief in the supernatural before that happened, but it changed my mind. Anyway, thank you for allowing me to share my story. You know, I love your guys' show. I hope that you guys enjoy the story.
I almost feel there's a couple of things going on there.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe the artillery and everything they were hearing in the middle of the night was almost residual, but yet there's conscious presences there that, like, if you're not respectful, the scorpion incident and things like that. I feel like there's ghosts of people that are doing things, but yet some of the noises they're hearing are just old echoes of the past.
Sure. Well, I think that's going to be true in any, you know, active war zone, especially places where it's been active war zone for, you know, years and 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 years. You know, we talk, you know, easily today, and it's an easy concept for us to go, oh yes, that battlefield over there is haunted, or Gettysburg is haunted, or, you know, insert American battlefield here. But it'd be the same there, you know, too. I mean, in some of the battlefields, you know, in America, let me talk about being haunted. The battles, you know, some were more drawn out than others, but some were like a day or two. Mm-hmm. And then we have these stories of echoes of hauntings forever. Yeah. You know, in some of these places, the fucking battles never end, you know, mm-hmm. And it's going and going and going for hundreds, sometimes thousands of years. So yeah, I mean, those places are going to just be utter hotspots of activity that's both residual, that's conscious, that's probably not of this earth as well, just with all the negative energy that, you know, is in a place of so much death and destruction and anxiety and sadness and depression that, you know, it's like scorched earth. But I'm not talking about in terms of, you know, bombs. Mm-hmm. I'm talking in terms of emotional energy that have literally scorched the earth. And good luck ever changing that in your lifetime. You know, yeah. I, like, there's no exorcism, there's no cleansing, there's no anything.
that is ever going to be able to, I think, get the energy off of some of those spots, other than thousands upon thousands of years of peace. Mm-hmm. And maybe even then it will still, it's like a half, it's like nuclear half-life. Mm-hmm. It's like, it goes away eventually, but you'll never see it.
Right.
You know, so, but when you have things like that, yeah, I mean, I'm not at all surprised. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. That experience with us. I'm always very interested when we get service members calling in and sharing stories. We don't get a ton of them, but when we do, it's very much appreciated.
Yeah.
And we do appreciate that very much. And of course, your service too. Thank you for that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to another caller and hear your story. Hi.
This is Sherry North, and I am an EPP member, and I also have another story to let you guys know. I'm a paranormal investigator, and me and my group were in an old abandoned asylum in Connecticut. And I had walked up the steps, and getting to the second floor, you had to walk up a winding staircase. When you turn the corner, there is a hallway, and it has five doors on the left and five doors on the right. When I had turned the corner, I had a digital voice recorder in my hand, and I asked, is there anyone here that would like to communicate? Simultaneously, all 10 doors slammed shut. I just kind of stood there in absolute astonishment that all of the doors had shut at the same time. If one had shut, I would have been, it's the wind, it's something else. But to have all 10 doors, five on each side, slam at the same time was just creepy beyond creepy. I got three EVPs. One said, I'm in pleasure. The other one said, I hate you. And the other one said, get out. So that was three that I had gotten, and they were all Class A EVPs. I could hear them like I am talking to somebody right next to me. It was very creepy. The second one, in Pittsfield, Mass., I had a friend of mine, Stephen, passed away due to suicide. When I was visiting the gravesite, he had said to me before he died, if I ever die, you'll be the first to know. I had his friend call me up the day that he died, and I knew right away that something had happened. And I said to him, I had a dream that Stephen killed himself. I said, let me describe what he was wearing. And he had his Harley Davidson shirt on, his blue jeans, his eyeglasses were on, he had his boots on, and his white socks. And I, to a T, described everything that Stephen was wearing when he passed away, because I had the dream the night before that something was going to happen. So that's another very creepy thing that I've had happen. I dream about things before they happen. I've had this all my life due to being an empath. Thank you very much. Take care.
Well, I think the 10 slamming doors was nobody wanted to talk for sure.
Yeah.
On that. And then the EVPs, nobody wanted to talk. So I wonder sometimes with asylums, you know, are they always closed to talking, or sometimes are they open to talking?
Are you talking the people that are residing there?
Mm-hmm.
The ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
I think it all depends.
Yeah.
You know, we often talk about ghosts being not that far different in death as spirits as they were in life. And I think that's something that oftentimes for many, many years, we didn't give them credit for, where it's like, wow, why would they do this or that? Because that's what they were doing in life. That was their demeanor then. Why would it be different now? You have to wonder if sometimes if someone is suffering from a disability and they were in an asylum. Now, granted, we can get into it's not a debate, just the facts of people that were admitted to asylums when they were, you know, socially acceptably called asylums. Mm-hmm. Not everyone was there, should have been there. I mean, husbands would admit wives when they wanted a new wife.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, horrible shit. You know, so there was plenty of people there that really had no business being in an asylum, but society was, oh, okay. But then, of course, you would have people who, you know, had developmental disabilities and stuff that were there, too, that they would, you know, they didn't get the greatest care either, but they were there. But you have to wonder then in death, if those who had those disabilities in life still have them on the other side.
Yeah.
And are they able, just as they had difficulty communicating, some would have difficulty communicating in life, mm-hmm. would they suffer the same disability on the other side too? I mean, does that magically change when you're dead, or does it not? Is it still the same person? I know idyllically, we'd all like to think, oh, you die and anything that's held you back in life, suddenly it's there. If you're blind, you can see. If you know, if there's something, you know, wrong and you have some disease or whatever it may be with your brain, suddenly that's cured and it's clear and you're good. Mm-hmm. I don't know, nor does anyone else. But I think what we've seen more than anything else is the fact that if you're an asshole in life, and we're not talking about disabilities here, just talking about assholes, you tend to be an asshole ghost. If you're a nice person in life, you tend to be a nice ghost, kind of just there, wallflower. You're still a wallflower. I don't know. So I'm wondering if someone has a disability, is it still there?
Yeah.
And is that barrier still there for them, unfortunately, that prevented them from being able to communicate with the living as well as they would like and everyone would like? Is that still there? And is it even more difficult then because it's a ghost?
Well, and see, you know, a very different experience would be like Waverly. That's very active. And yeah. Most of the time when people go to investigate, they get something. It's like they're
sure.
the inhabitants are willing to communicate.
Yeah. In one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. That's where I'm just kind of puzzled as to, you know, is this in general at all, or is it just case by case? Depends on the facility.
I think a lot of it probably depends on the atmosphere of the facility. Mm-hmm. I think you tend to have more cases at facilities, at least more, I would say, dramatic cases today. You tend to have it from facilities that had a reputation of being negative, of having a lot of shit going down that, you know, either, you know, the science of the time was shitty and we know it, and, you know, what they practiced, what they thought was right, was really quite inhumane, or you have facilities that flat out were doing just inhumane shit and they knew it. You sometimes, I think, see more activity there as opposed to ones, because I've had many people interviewed on the other show, The Grave Talks, where they talk about an asylum or a care facility, and I don't jump into every single asylum or care facility assuming the worst. Mm-hmm. You can't, because there's many that were like shut down in the 80s or something. And they're like, actually, we were well known for being very humane and not of the reputation of some of these others that are out there.
Right.
And you do end up, I mean, in my experience from talking, those places can be extremely active, but you find less of the darker stuff and less of the frustration. And I think sometimes when we start talking about darker, it's not necessary. I think that's our interpretation. That's our interpretation as humans going, oh, this is dark. Because you're going into a facility that may have a history of not great care, but then you have spirits there that are so frustrated and angry and feel that, you know, just as frustrated as they were when they were alive. And so you're going to feel that anger and that frustration. And is that dark, or is that more, you're feeling someone who's angry and frustrated. And so, yeah, I guess that will be dark, but it doesn't mean that individual's intention is dark or that ghost's intention is dark or evil or mean. It's somebody who's frustrated as shit. Mm-hmm. And is still there, and you're going to pick up on that frustration, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's directed at you as being the investigator. It means they're in a really bad place, and unfortunately, they're still there.
Yeah. Well, and that goes along with your thought of, you know, do they keep on with what they're suffering from after they're dead?
And that's what I wonder. And I wonder, you know, at least when they're on the haunting plane, if you will, mm-hmm. we're able to pick them up here and there at these facilities. When they're still in that state of the beyond, is everything still kind of in place there as far as the disability? And then is there a path? Is there a step beyond that? Whether you call it, you know, crossing them over to heaven or whatever the spot beyond that is. Is that the spot where they finally get those things lifted off of them? Mm-hmm. Is there that spot that gets those things lifted off of them? If I were to guess and somebody's to ask my opinion, and I don't think there's any experts in this is 100% opinion based, but based on all the stories that I've had, my guess would be that if you are haunting a facility, you are probably still dealing with the same shit you were dealing with in life. If you are still there.
Yeah.
If you're not there anymore, your guess is as good as mine. In my heart, I would love to believe that someone who's suffering from something like that gets it washed away and that there's the best version of someone that is able to come forward. I don't know the answer to that. But as far as what we have evidence of and what we've seen and what we hear about, I don't know that things change all that much between here and there, other than some people can see you and some people cannot.
Yeah.
Or sense you and feel you. So that's my Debbie Downer moment of the day.
Okay.
But I think I'm just giving.
Yeah.
Based on my thoughts.
Sure.
Your thoughts? Are you going to uplift anyone?
I've already interjected my thoughts. Okay. We've been on this for a while.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to share your story with us, write in at realghoststoriesonline.com or 855-853-4802. We'd love to hear from you. Support the show, become an extra podcast person at eppghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.